My mother and father were jazz musicians, and so even as a toddler, I was already hearing the music, not paying much attention to it, really. I was off in the bedroom playing with my toy soldiers and things, you know. But it was getting in there, and it was what I always wanted to do. My mother was a jazz pianist, my father was a jazz saxophone and clarinet player, and that was what I had always sort of envisioned that I would do. But when my father told me at age 6 that when I asked him if I could play his saxophone, he said, your fingers are too short, they're too small. As a child of that age, you think, well, by the time, you know, they're big enough, I'll be an old man. You know, of course, that's not true. And even if you thought, well, they'll be large enough in another 5 or 6 years, then you would find yourself thinking as a child that by then I'll be tired of waiting, you know. So they started me on piano at 8 and started me on clarinet at 10. And those were disastrous experiences musically because the piano lessons were little, cute little parlor pieces, you know, and put the little gold star on it and all that. And the clarinet study was strictly for high school concert band, which, I'm sorry, not high school, but elementary and junior high concert band. And I was told that that was classical music. And of course it wasn't. It was municipal park band music, you know. So I didn't hear my first symphony until I was 15 years old. And then I thought, wow, this is great music. You know, where's this been all my life? Anyway, at age 11, I turned to my parents and I said, that's it. I'm not studying music anymore. I can't stand it. You know, this is not what I want to do. But I didn't know how to put into words what I did want, which was jazz music. I wanted to do what they were doing and what their friends were doing and the bands that they were playing with that I would hear on the radio. You know, they were performing a lot. So as soon as I announced that I was through with it, then my father suddenly came over to me and he said, how would you like to play my horn? And wow, it was the first time I'd thought about it since I was 6 years old. And I said, oh, yeah. And he said, and I'll set you up with the best teacher in town who plays for Duke Ellington whenever Ben Webster can't make it. And he said, and he can play both of Coleman Hawkins's solos on choruses on Body and Soul, note for note, just like the record. Well, you know, I was captive then. I became a slave to that. 6 months later, I started playing jobs. I was still 11 years old, you know. This is in South Bend, Indiana.
That's the voice of Jerry Coker. Tonight, we're featuring Jerry and Patty Coker on our show. Nelda Hill recorded that interview. I'd like to thank her for that and also for the suggestion on doing a show around Jerry and Patty. Earlier, we heard from Tom Johnson, Kelly Jolly, and just a moment ago, I played a section of Fours, a Jerry Coker composition from his recording Rebirth. That featured Jerry Coker on tenor sax, Jack Coker on piano, Rusty Holloway on bass, and Keith Brown on drums. Donald Brown's joining us this evening on Improvisations, a special show where we're talking about Jerry Coker and Patty Coker. Donald, thanks for stopping in.
Well, thanks for asking me, Todd.
So when did you first become aware of who Jerry was, and how did you end up at UT? Was he involved in that as well?
Yeah, he definitely was. I think I became aware of Jerry, I'm going to guess, maybe like around 1974, 75. I was living in Memphis, and a pianist, James Williams, who was like my mentor, he worked, you know, talked me into going to Jamie Ablesole camp, and through attending the camp, this is when I met Jerry.
And what were your first impressions of him, or what did you think of him, you know, either as a musician or as a teacher at that point?
He was as a musician, he was everything you'd want to aspire to be. I mean, I was blown away by his knowledge of not just jazz but music and just thought he was the greatest, you know, just the sweetest guy, you know, really soft-spoken guy. But, you know, very giving and very caring person. And so, I just remember thinking not just Jerry, but everyone at the camp, you know, Jamie Ablesole and James Williams at the time was teaching at the camp. And I guess I kind of got the job here through Jerry. I was had been teaching at the Berklee School of Music, and I had made up my mind I was going to leave there and just move back to Memphis. And as it turned out, they had offered the teaching position here to Ellis Marcellus, Winton's father, and he didn't want to. Accepted, and then they offered it to James Williams, and he didn't want to accept it, and then he mentioned it to me, and you know, They flew me in, I think, to Nashville to play a little concert with them, and then they flew me back down to interview me. And so I was somewhat in transition. My wife and kids were living in Memphis, and I was just starting to move all my stuff from Boston. And so it worked out that summer of 88.
And did you have any particular feelings about moving to Knoxville? You know, I mean, West Tennessee and East Tennessee, very different, you know.
Well, I tell the story jokingly, but it's the truth. I remember one, I don't know if it was Christmas, when it was a Christmas, but we drove home from Boston to Memphis, and we had to pass through Knoxville. And I remember thinking to myself, we stopped at a store, and just the feeling, I shouldn't judge it just from stopping in one area of town, but I just remember thinking, man, this is one place I'd never live, you know. And but then, you know, I remember living, I lived in Boston back in 1974 for about 6 months. And after living there for 6 months, I remember thinking, man, I'd never live here. And I ended up teaching there for 5 years. And so I ended up teaching here, I guess it's going on 29 years. And but yeah, I didn't expect to land here, but you know, it's worked out great.
Was the fact that Jerry was definitely involved in the program a big draw for you?
Definitely, yeah.
What did you learn from him as a teacher of jazz music? Because, you know, teaching history or things like that, that's one thing. But teaching music itself and how to play it and how to approach it, that's a whole different bag. What did you learn from him about teaching?
Mainly, you know, how to up your game, and the thing that I think that was reinforced observing him was that, you know, you're always a student yourself. You know, you should always be in that process of learning. And, you know, I observed Jerry teaching the history of jazz class, which later I taught. And, he had a way of making students feel special, and the way he interacted with each student individually was something that I picked up on that I thought was really special. And but the other thing is that with all his teaching chores and running the department, I was just, still to this day, I mean, Jerry, you know, Jerry, where Jerry's at now, I still wouldn't be surprised if he still tries to pick up his horn and play. But it just seemed like there was never a time that he wasn't practicing. If it was between students, you know, if he had 30 minutes between students, you know, Jerry would be practicing. And, you know, not just the saxophone, but the piano, you know, he played really nice piano. He plays nice piano. And so just that whole thing about being professional, you know, keep trying to up your game, because, you know, that's what we owe to the profession, but that's what we owe to our students. It's the minute you seem to become complacent as a teacher. You know, that was another thing about Jerry. With all the music he had played and all the great musicians he's played with, he still was always aware of how the music was changing. He knew always knew who were the young players out there. And, you know, as teachers, we can kind of get stuck in our generation. And you know, you think jazz ended with the people of your time, but you gotta, if you're going to be a good teacher, you gotta be aware of the most recent books out there, the teaching, you know, tools that are out there. And but more importantly, like I say, he was always playing, and he has the most beautiful sound, and once you hear Jerry play, you know, between his sound and note choices, you recognize he has a very individual sound.
Yeah, and it's and Tom Johnson was in earlier, we were talking about how Jerry's sound changed over the years, where he was kind of more on that West Coast Stan Getz thing, And then you know, you fast forward and like you were talking about, you know, like when a lot of those young lions came about in the early 60s, late 50s, Coltrane, Pharoah Sanders, people like that, you know, you kind of wouldn't think that like a West Coast guy who's in the Get School is going to change and is going to pick up also this other new stuff. And I think he was a reticent at first from what I've heard tell, but boy, he really took to it like a duck to water. You know?
Yeah.
What was it like just working on him on a regular, like, day-to-day basis, just like a colleague?
He just felt like, you know, one of the guys, you know. Whether it was on the bandstand with him, you know, he had a way to make you feel at ease. And he was always sharing knowledge, you know, and in a really humble way, not a way to make you feel stupid or whatever. But I mean, he was always kind of in teaching mode. But you know, he was, you know, he's a funny guy, you know, a great sense of humor, and you can always feel him sharing love. You know, he's that was one of the things that, you know, I miss about Jerry. You know, we said I love you all the time to each other. You know, whether, you know, just me leaving the office, we knew we weren't going to see each other for a while. But you know, like I said, really warm, caring, giving guy. And so, yeah. And then, you know, he's there's another whole element and dimension of him as a teacher based on some of the students he's turned out. And that's kind of like a who's who of jazz.
Yeah, especially all those people that came out of the Miami school in particular. You know?
Yeah.
And the books.
And
he's probably taught people, he does. Well, I know for a fact that when I lived overseas, I saw his books in the music schools in different languages. You know? And I'd say, oh, yeah, I know that guy. Well, anything else you want to add about Jerry or Patty?
Well, you know, he was one of the innovators of jazz education. And as you mentioned, his books and getting to, you know, witness him, how he went about teaching from the books. Jerry was the kind of guy, you know, in later years, you didn't see him on the scene as much out performing. But, you know, once he did perform, you know, you can tell everybody was on their toes and knew that they had to step up everything because, you know, him as well as, you know, we were fortunate to have so many, at least for me moving here, to have so many great, you know, older players here, you know, Rocky, Jerry, Lance Owens, Bill Scarlett. And so, you know, that they made it really exciting for me to be here that I didn't miss New York as much just because I knew there was a scene here where guys and Jerry, you know, led the charge for, you know, elevating the bandstand to where it should be. Patty, the times I got to work with her, and she was something to watch work with vocalists, and you know, has a beautiful voice, a great sense of phrasing and stuff, and so yeah, they gave us a lot.
Donald Brown stopping in to talk to us here on Improvisations, talking about Jerry and Patty Coker. That's who we are saluting tonight. Earlier in the show, I played a cut off this Claire Fisher Orchestra record, which I just love. And we'll hear another track. This, of course, features Jerry Coker. This is Ornithardy. I believe I said that right. And we'll probably also hear Quiet Dawn. Thank you. couple of cuts from a recording called Extension by the Claire Fisher Orchestra featuring Jerry Coker. We heard Quiet Dawn and Ornithody. I'm not really sure, but it's fun to try to say it. Thanks to Donald Brown, Nelda Hill, Tom Johnson, Kelly Jolly for taking the time out to help me with tonight's show. And, of course, the whole show is dedicated to Jerry and Patty Coker. It's obvious how much you are appreciated. We're going to finish off with a little more Jerry, and on another evening, we're going to feature some Patty Coker, so stay tuned for that. And just a little more from Jerry to take us home. Thank you.